The six mega corporations that run 90% of all the media companies that deliver you the news on the radio, on the television, on the cable, and online are lying to you. Right now they're trying to tell you that the TPP is dead, but we're here to say that's a lie. It is a trick because we the people have been rising up. We have been making a noise, and guess what, folks? We have been making a difference. Right now, as I record this, the United States Department of Justice has announced it will be temporarily halting construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline effective immediately. And that was a ruling from President Obama. So I got to say, hey, Mr. Obama, thank you so fucking much for getting off your ass and doing something for the American people instead of the goddamn corporations that break the law, trample human rights, and seem to think that the justice system just doesn't apply to them, something they could bribe or buy their way out of. I'm Hart D. Fisher, and if you haven't been paying attention to what's going on in our country, then brother, this show's gonna give you a serious fucking heart attack!
If you know what you want, go out and get it. Ever feeling strong, don't ever let it sway your way from where you should be headed. Come on, yeah, come on. It's taking a lifetime. What I got is my own. It's taking a lifetime. Well, what I got, my own. You see, I've been cultivating, manipulating, test of time has shown.
Welcome to Heart Attack. I am Hart D. Fisher, and folks, there is a lot happening in the news. While everybody is upset about just another fucking football player who didn't want to stand up for the national anthem in protest over the Black Lives Matter movement, folks, there is $9 trillion missing from the Federal Reserve, and the people in our government are dodging the question of who's going to investigate this. Are they going to investigate this? Because the last time something like this happened for, I don't know, $2.3 trillion, and Donald Rumsfeld went on national TV to say, hey, we're missing $2.3 trillion. Well, gosh, oh golly, that was 9/10. And then on 9/11, a bunch of buildings came down. What else is going on, folks? Well, guess what? You've been hearing a lot about the Dakota Pipeline and how there is a corporation trying to build an oil pipeline across Indian lands. What they're not telling you is that this corporation has no legal rights to build the pipeline on this land. What they're not telling you is that this land is supposed to be sovereign land for the Indians. This is supposed to be their land. We in America are not supposed to be able to go on their land and tell them what to do with their land. They have been protesting what's going on, and so what does the corporation do? Well, they get a bunch of mercenaries and they sick German shepherds on women and male protesters who aren't armed. It's not like they're there with guns and knives and shit like that. They're not. They're unarmed. And you've got these mercenaries sicking dogs on them, and women are getting bit in the face. It's disgusting. And then after that, they go and they take their bulldozers and they illegally bulldoze sacred burial sites. This is some really fucked up shit, folks. But we're not done yet. A recent UK study now reveals that half of all patients are dying from their chemo, not from their cancer. I want you to hear that again. A recent United Kingdom study has found out, the stunning fact that half of the cancer patients going through chemo are dying from the chemo, not the cancer. Folks, we have a lot going on in our country besides the voter fraud, besides the dog and pony show, besides them trying to lie and say that the TPP is dead. The TPP is not dead. And if you're new to the show, then I'm talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that has been lobbied in secret, created in secret, that's a total power grab for the giant corporations that already run most of the world. So the guy I'm bringing on this week is a very smart individual. I'm bringing on a technology expert who I've known for many years, and actually I got to meet him first because he was taking care of my computers and keeping me running and keeping me free of viruses and spyware. Because, folks, when you influence people in this country now, you become a person of interest, and they keep an eye on you, and they spy on you. So the man I want to welcome on is known publicly as BE3N, Uber Geek, but to me, he's just Friendly Ben. Ben, welcome to Heart Attack.
Thanks for having me on.
I have actually talked to you about being on the show like years ago. And it's kind of funny that now I've moved out of California, you're on the show.
Well, you know, you had to get away from the entertainment capital before you could really bring the entertainment to the world.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this nomenclature, BE3N, where's that come from, Ben?
Actually, originally, it started as a typo. It was a typographical, while I was typing my name very quickly on my very first Linux system. It wasn't even mine. It was my friend's. He was giving me an account on it. And I kind of liked it. Kind of stuck. It's kind of an homage to Tom Lear by saying that the three is silent. So it's just Ben.
Yeah, and folks, you got to love it when your tech guy shows up with food from Porto's, which is an amazing restaurant in Los Angeles. They've got a couple different locations, huge lines to get this stuff. And thanks to Ben, he got my wife hooked on this shit. And now that we're in the Midwest, she's dying for that shit.
FedEx can be your friend.
Yeah, right? Ben, I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about some of the technology stuff that's being thrown around on the news. And I find it kind of confusing. The first issue I want to get into with you was, there's all this talk about the hack to reveal Hillary Clinton's destroyed emails that are involving confidential security, that are involving top secret classified information, that are, I guess what I wanted to ask is, to a layman, to a regular guy, help me understand, if Hillary Clinton is the one who deleted these emails, 33,000 of them, in an effort to cover her tracks, how did people recover that? What do they mean they hacked the DNC? What does that mean?
Well, I think there's two separate incidences here. There's Hillary Clinton's private email server, which may or may not have been owned or taken by other people. Those emails have yet to leak. She released a bunch, and some of them disappeared via some kind of internal house cleaning, and those people would very much like to see. But in addition to that, the DNC was hacked by a group of unknown individuals, though there's a lot of conjecture going around, and they stole and published quite a number of emails from the DNC, internal memorandums and emails that talked about all kinds of shady behavior and led to a couple resignations, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, actually, four of the top people from the Democratic National Convention all resigned, including the number one lady in charge of it all, and here's the thing, these guys have been caught with voter fraud, and what I'm kind of confused on is, how come she's still a viable candidate, and how come they're not prosecuting this person for violating state and federal voting guidelines?
Well, she didn't commit a crime, allegedly. Her employee that she hired to commit the crime did it. So, you know.
Yeah, right? I don't understand that at all. It really kind of puzzles me.
Well, it's the same way that with the police. If I let's say I'm an ATF officer, hypothetically, because it's, you know, illegal to impersonate. I ask you to sell me cocaine. Mm-hmm. And you do or don't, it's irrelevant. Whatever you do at that point, it's entrapment. Because I am an officer of the law, allegedly. So if I hire my friend Dave, who's not a policeman, to try and buy cocaine off of you, then it's suddenly not entrapment, and everything is fine. And you can basically, there are all kinds of consulting firms that basically work for the police in order to entrap individuals, but that's another story.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. My question is, okay, so if you have these emails sent out, wouldn't there be copies of the emails from the person who received them?
Usually, but it depends. Some providers, like, you know, Gmail, you're just seeing a live view of your mailbox. So if the message is deleted from the mailbox, then there's no computer or phone for the message to remain on.
Okay, and it's my understanding that if you use Gmail, that's Google Mail, that yeah. Gmail data mines your private emails.
Oh, yeah, that's in the fine print, or not so fine print.
And what exactly does that mean when they say data mining your emails?
They basically say that our robots are going to read your email, not human beings, and we are going to allegedly anonymize that information. So we don't know that, you know, Dave Jones is interested in furries. We just know some 35-year-old male in some place is, you know, interested in whatever, or shops for whatever, or searched for whatever.
But that information would be in a computer somewhere that would relate to, let's say the guy's name is Dave the Furry.
They claim to anonymize it. Now, they don't open the source. They don't invite people in to check it out. So it's unconfirmed whether that is, in fact, what they're doing. But.
And we do know that Google actually sent vans around the country during their mapping of the streets for their Google Maps with email sucking up software to suck up people's passwords through their wireless networks. They got
caught. Yeah, not just emails. They sucked up everything in the air.
What does that mean?
It's for network names, which they use for GPS positioning, but they got anything that was transmitted. And if you didn't have a password on your data, then that information was in the clear sent to them. They could read it all. And to be honest, WEP, which is it's an older standard, but it's a popular encryption scheme for wireless communications, is trivial to break. It takes about a minute and a half to anybody who knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So if we have a corporation that's kind of known for overstepping the bounds of people's privacy, how can we have any faith that they're not, that they're actually anonymizing anything?
Oh, it's true. Didn't they take the don't be evil thing out of their charter?
Yeah, they did.
So I guess they're not required anymore to not be evil.
Because they were involved in helping create spyware for China to spy on dissidents, weren't they?
Yeah, well, they did a lot of great firewall of China help when they were trying to get a foothold in the country. But then, of course, they left anyway.
Really? So Google helped them subjugate their people and then didn't even do business in China?
Well, they tried. They helped them subjugate their people in order to gain market share. But they're not alone. I mean, a lot of places have done it. It was kind of hilarious. Back in the antitrust suit against Microsoft, mm-hmm. Microsoft claimed that it was a matter of national security. They could not let their competitors examine the Windows code for what was being alleged against Microsoft, which was that they were deliberately making, you know, alternative browsers not run as well as Internet Explorer to create an unfair. Well, anyway, they claimed national security. We can't show our trade secrets. In other words, if anyone saw how bad the Windows code was, we'd all be in a lot of trouble. And not 3 or 4 years later, they ended up just handing the source code to China to try and win a government contract, which they didn't get.
So that's two major American corporations that helped China do terrible things and then got really nowhere for it.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound too smart, huh?
Well, I mean, it's not surprising when you see, like, these are the same companies that joined PRISM to spy on Americans and foreign nationals for the U.S. government.
And what exactly is PRISM?
Oh, I this is all from the Snowden mm-hmm. leaks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a information database that basically gives the NSA and their subcontractors access to tons of Google information, tons of Apple information, tons of Microsoft information, you know, Hotmail, emails, Skype, Facebook, all those things. There's some really great slides if you look for PRISM and Snowden on the internets.
And for the literally challenged, PRISM is PRISM. That's PRISM. And I urge listeners to go check this out, because the thing that I would say is the key phrase you said was not just the government, but their subcontractors, which are private corporations that are working for them in data mining centers all over the country. And
And other countries. Don't forget, there's a
like, really
the rule of five. I can't remember what they're called.
What, the Five Eyes program?
Well, no, it was a group of other friendly nation states, like the UK and Germany and France
and Australia
in on it. And they give us their citizen information. We give them ours. Yeah, it's terrifying.
It's really interesting because we're talking about millions of private individuals that have access to this information. Like the FBI has access to the NSA's files, and there's nobody keeping track of what they're looking for, who they've looked at. They just have carte blanche. And we already have seen lots of boondoggles with our law enforcement agencies doing dirty deeds with this information.
Oh, yeah. And then the ATF was given information and told to lie about how they sourced that information?
In court.
This violates the very, foundations of our legal system.
Mm-hmm. Which is full disclosure to either side for material that's going to be used in prosecution, correct?
Well, at least full disclosure to the defense. The defense is allowed to keep secrets from the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not evidence, but, you know.
So essentially, when you say that, let's say the DEA gets information to convict a drug dealer from the NSA, they're being informed to lie in a court of law, and it's called backtracking or backsourcing their information to create a cover scheme on how they got this information, correct?
Yeah.
That is truly frightening in and of itself.
Yeah.
That
alleged law enforcement agencies would be encouraging their employees to essentially break the law in order to enforce the law, which is quite contradictory.
And lie their asses off in front of a judge for them to be saying, hey, you know, this is how we got the info, but actually they're totally lying is really disgusting. And on that note, we're going to take a break for funny, happy-go-lucky music, and we'll be right back with more happy-go-lucky heart attack.
They will turn away no more.
Welcome back to Heart Attack. I am Hart D. Fisher. With me is BE3N, a technology expert and uber geek. And one of the things we're talking about off the air is, you know, a lot of people say, oh, gee, if I have nothing to hide, what does it matter if people spy on me? What does it matter if people lie about me in a court of law? Well, I'm a guy who could tell you folks that I had my entire life turned upside down because the mass media lied about me. I did a book on Jeffrey Dahmer, and in the book, I was condemning Jeffrey Dahmer, condemning the mass media's portrayal of a monster and a pedophile, and they turned it around and said that I'm the one exploiting Jeffrey Dahmer, that I'm an evil guy, and they did things like when I was interviewed for CNN's Murder by Numbers documentary. They had a very smart film crew. We talked for a very long time, and what CNN did is they took the answers to one question, and in the editing room, they made my answer as if it was for a completely different question, which is very dishonest and really is a fuck you to the people and the truth. And this kind of thing really turned my whole life around. It was very difficult for my mother. My mother worked for the Department of Public Aid. They made it like I was some kind of racist and that I was celebrating Dahmer. And it got to the point where it was so bad, my mom didn't let people know who her son was when she was working for the Department of Public Aid. Now, this doesn't even involve... Actually, it affected me in a court case. I was in a court case where I was being sued by a man who had been blackmailing me on the making of The Garbage Man. And in the courtroom, I had affidavits that backed up my legal position from the people I had made agreements with. And the judge said, in the courtroom, I'm very well aware of who you are, Mr. Fisher, and what you do. And I find it hard to believe that anyone would enter into an agreement with a person like you. And that was because of the biased TV coverage on me. And a lot of people had a wrong idea of me. They portrayed me as something I was completely not. It's one of those things where just because you think you don't have anything to hide, that doesn't matter if somebody has a conflict with you. Let's say you have a giant corporation that decides they want to put a pipeline through your backyard and they want to seize your home and they'll look for anything that they could twist or turn or use against you. Now, not only is everybody being spied on relentlessly by the NSA, and the NSA is leaking this information privately to the FBI, to the DEA, and all these private corporate entities and their employees, and who knows how big a background check they're getting, they all have access to this information that you don't have access to. I mean, this is taxpayer money being used. You don't have access to this information on yourself even. And now we're finding that Facebook is spying on you through your phone. Have you heard about that with their mobile app giving them access to your microphone on your phone?
They're not the only ones. There's a lot. I mean, they definitely track your GPS. They've been doing that for years, even when you're not in the app.
So even when you're not using the app, they're still tracking you.
Yeah, you can fix that in settings if you guys have iOS or even some versions of Android.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Oh, you can stop devices, some devices, or some apps, right, from using your GPS when they're not running. In the privacy settings of a lot of Android and iOS devices.
What do you mean an iOS device? I'm not a smartphone.
I just mean like an iPhone. If you have an iPhone, you can go to your settings, to your privacy settings, and tell like Yelp to only use GPS when you're in Yelp and not other times.
Okay.
Or not to have access to your GPS at all. I was just kind of a PSA to the peoples.
Gotcha. We were talking last week about you going to a recent hacking conference, and you were telling me something about software being used to hack into people's iPhones. Can you educate my audience the way you blew my mind?
Oh, yeah. I learned a little bit this trip, and indeed. I was playing in the Wi-Fi Village at the DEF CON hacker convention in Las Vegas, and somebody demonstrated just how easy it is to trick an iPhone into joining a malicious network. And the way that you do it is essentially the iPhone, in order to join wireless networks as quickly as it does, it basically asks for them before it knows they're there. So at any given time, it's asking for every network that it knows about. And if you know how to listen, you could then become the networks it's asking for. Of course, to really trick it, it has to be an open network that you've joined, or you have to know the password and produce the same password. So there's a little complexities there. But once you get somebody on your network, you can control the flow of the information and basically intercept, or what they call man in the middle, the communication. So if you don't check that little SSL box, then it becomes trivial for me to steal all of your passwords, gain access to all of your email accounts. And even if you do check that box, if your settings aren't right, I can pop up a little dialogue on your phone that will just say, there was an error with your connection. Do you want to continue or not? Mm-hmm. And most people have just been trained to just click continue. In fact, I did a demo for a client one time, and I was I told him I was man in the middling him. And the little message popped up that said, it can't verify the authenticity of your server. Do you want to continue? And I told him, if he clicks continue, I will gain all of his credentials. And so he didn't want to do that. He didn't want his information getting out there, even though I wasn't really going to release it. He clicked cancel as fast as he could. It kept popping up. And after about 10, 15 clicks, he accidentally clicked continue, and I had all his information.
You know what? I have to admit, that happens. That is happening to me with my email, and I have been clicking continue. What should I do?
What you have to do is make sure the server address you're using to connect to your mail server is the same server address that's on the certificate that verifies its authenticity. This happens, pardon me, most of the time when people have an internet provider, you know, like GoDaddy or Bluehost or
For me, it's Host. It's HostGator.
Yeah, or HostGator. And HostGator has a mail server, and they sign the certificate for that mail server. But their mail server has a name, and it's usually mailserver.hostgator.net or whatever. Mm-hmm. And your domain, you know, mydomain.com, or what you think is your mail server, which is mail.mydomain.com, is not on the certificate. So when you connect with that, it'll generate an SSL error every time, basically saying, I can't vouch for the server because the name you gave me and the name it gave me are different.
So most likely I'm being middlemanned.
Well, no.
No?
Most likely you have an misconfigured email server.
Okay.
Or an email client.
Because I have been getting a shit ton of malware. I have been having computer problems. The infection, the computer virus software that you installed on my computer, I have to run it on a regular basis because I'm always getting viruses now.
Well, that admittedly, that software takes a lot of credit. Most of the viruses that you see are actually for Windows out there. And in fact, they're not even modern enough. They're for like older versions of various bits of software. If you guys have heard of the phrase zero day?
I've heard of it, but explain it to my audience. What is zero day?
It gets thrown around a lot, and it it's basically an unpatched vulnerability. So if you know something that you can do to the latest version of Chrome that could take over Chrome, that is a very powerful tool. But most hacking, most malware does not use that. That's so rarely used. It's mostly used for stunt hacking and contests like Pwn to Own, where they just try and make our software safer by discovering these vulnerabilities. In fact, that's a whole other can of worms. If we treated software companies the same way that we treat like automobile manufacturers about these vulnerabilities, there would be a lot less of them.
And I think that you have a big point here. And you've been stalking you've been talking in terms of your email passwords, your this, your Facebook password. But actually, I think the real danger is in most people, a lot of people are filing their income taxes online. They are doing online banking. They are doing all their online bill paying, and people can build up a profile on you of who you are, what kind of money you have, where does your kid go to school, you know, things that are really, really stalkerish.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah, and also issues that you could have your bank accounts just absolutely wiped out. And I've met so many people in the last couple of years that have had fake IRS files, not fake IRS, fake tax returns filed before they filed their own return, and people getting
huge.
Their return.
How big is that? Oh, man, I have a bunch of clients that were leaked in the Sony hack. So all their information got out there, and every criminal and their brother is trying to, you know, make a penny on it.
Yeah, it's huge. I've even met a lot of people out here in the Midwest that it's happened to.
Yeah, I recommend that if you do not know your IRS PIN code, you contact the IRS and make sure you do.
What do you mean your IRS PIN code?
You can basically lock your returns to a PIN.
Uh-huh.
Now, admittedly, through social engineering, it's not that difficult to reset the PIN.
Mm-hmm.
But it does offer you some protection.
Okay.
Yeah, that was another thing. At DEF CON, I saw a social engineering competition where they were basically just calling up and bullshitting an operator into revealing all kinds of information.
What is social engineering? What is it? What do you mean?
It's basically conning. It's using words and language to trick people into doing and releasing information that they're not supposed to, or doing stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah. Old school con man stuff. Old school. What do they call those rooms? Boiler rooms with real estate scams and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really. I mean, Kevin Mitnick has made quite a name for himself at that. He's a famous hacker. And he's. He was famous for basically being able to walk into the phone company like he belonged there and taking equipment and taking manuals and rewiring things. And
you know, that's actually pretty easy. I was a big fan of one of the founders of SEAL Team 6, Richard Marchenko. And Richard Marchenko talked about how if you're going to defeat a security system, the smartest thing to do is to defeat the human behind the security system.
Yeah.
They talked about walking into secure installations just with a tool belt, carrying some boards or some drywall, and just walking right in. And I could say I did the same thing with my movie, The Garbage Man. In my film, The Garbage Man, we went into a local grocery store with a 16-millimeter camera and just set up. It was a 24-hour store. We went up late at night, and we actually found we mapped out like 10 stores that we could, if we got kicked out of this one, we'll go to this one. And we shot trying to keep it so that you could edit it later, but no one stopped us at the first store. In fact, the stock boys and everybody thought that we had permission, and they were helping us. The employees of the store were helping us move stuff and keep customers away. It was insane.
Yeah, no, you could get away with a lot. I used to I used to have an XL1 camera back when they were cool, and I used to call it my press pass,
mm-hmm.
because I could walk into just about anywhere with that camera with a bunch of people around, and the cops would have a barricade, and I would walk right past the barricade with that camera.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually did that kind of thing for an adult film star named Max Hardcore, who actually went to jail for obscenity. That's a whole other story. But with Max, he had me as a graphic designer create a whole bunch of press passes, official Max Hardcore press team, and he would throw that on the dashboard of his car and just park all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, 2600 had a famous van that looked very much like a Pac Bell, phone company van. But, mm-hmm. you know, the logos weren't exactly right. The colors weren't exactly right. But they got into all kinds of places with that vehicle.
Wow. Wow. Well, we got to take a quick break for song. We'll be right back with more Heart Attack.
You gotta keep going. You gotta keep up.
holy shit, are you folks getting your mind blown like my mind is getting blown? I mean, I had a lot of this stuff in my head, but the more I talked to Ben, holy shit. And off the air, we were talking about this specific software being used to hack the iPhones, and it's being sold for a lot of money, right, Ben?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You guys out there who are Apple product owners, you may have noticed recently a 9.3.5 update to iOS. And that was literally just to fix one problem. Well, three problems, really. But it was an activist in the UAE. Let me see. I think I have his name here somewhere. I really should say it because he went through a lot of trouble. Ahmed Mansour is an internationally recognized human rights defender who operates out of the UAE. And apparently some very bad governments with deep pockets really wanted to spy on that guy. So they hired Finn Fisher and the hacking team, those guys out of Italy that totally got owned themselves and all of their secrets revealed, which is a whole other great story. But and then most recently, the NSO Group, which is out of Israel. They're a security firm that sells offensive hacking tools. And among them is a tool called Pegasus, which they license for, upwards of $30,000 a single install. And what this tool will allow you to do is if you can get an iOS user to click a link, which is the modern day equivalent of close your eyes and open your mouth.
Oh my God.
But if you can get an iOS user to click that link, you can, through a chain of 3 zero-day exploits, well, they're not 0 days anymore, completely control the phone. Activate the microphone, activate the tracking, send recorded conversations, even when you're not using the phone, you're just in the same room as the phone. Photographs, email messages, email credentials. It can even activate your phone to make it appear to receive fake messages from your own contacts, and it's a pretty nasty tool.
So essentially, it could create a fake IM conversation with a woman claiming she's your mistress, so they could like make you get a divorce.
Totally.
And that'd be easy for them.
Yeah, once they're in there, once they're embedded, then there's really nothing you can do except restore your device.
And so you're saying this software is being sold at $30,000 a pop?
Well, it's done in like shadowy, markets and smoke-filled rooms, so it's hard to get hard information. I read one quote that basically outlined 400 licenses for $7 million. So I didn't do the math on that, but that
Holy
seems like
shit.
Pretty expensive licensing.
That is, but that's a lot of people.
Well, if you think about it, this software, I mean, it's not easy to do to discover these vulnerabilities. iOS is one of the most secure mobile platforms. Mm-hmm. And to get your foot in the door is hard, but to get what they call persistence, and that really just means that when they turn off the device and they turn it back on, you're still in it.
Mm-hmm.
To get persistence on an iOS device is incredibly difficult. So difficult that it was sold by a group, not the same group, but another group that similarly trades in offensive technologies. It was bought for $1 million from some developer.
Mm-hmm.
And then who knows what it was done with then.
And so, for the folks at home who are having a hard time wrapping their mind around how this could be so bad, let's say you're a judge and you're working on the case involving the Dakota Pipeline. And you're looking like you're going to rule for the Indians. But the giant corporation spends, just $30,000, which is nothing to them, to create fake evidence on the judge's phone, to create maybe child porn on the judge's phone. And then, oops, this is found, and now you have leverage on the judge to get him to do what you do. And if you think I'm pulling this out of my ass, I know a person who did this in the 90s because he had access to a judge who was homosexual. This guy worked at a video store. He had the judge's renting records of homosexual pornography, and he used these records to blackmail the judge to get out of a bunch of traffic tickets. You guys get where I'm coming from now? So for the people that think this isn't a big deal, this is a huge, huge deal. They could put child porn on anybody's computer with this software, couldn't they?
Well, yeah, but that's, I mean, what's the terrifying thing is this is being bought and sold legally across borders to corporations with whatever interests, to governments with sketchy human rights track records. I mean, this kind of stuff is being used to find political dissidents, to silence
journalists. That's being used to silence journalists. Do you watch Cyber War on Viceland?
I don't doubt it. I mean, to keep tabs on journalists, to find their sources. I mean,
To put this in perspective,
I can't even imagine what it's like to be a journalist in these days.
To put this in perspective, there's a television show on Viceland, which is called Cyber War. And they went and they talked to a exiled journalist from, I think it was Uganda or Ethiopia, one of those countries like that. And he was a journalist. And they used software like this to find all of his sources back in his country and kill them. And not just kill them, torture them to death. So these things have serious consequences in our society.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's no doubt that this kind of stuff was used by... I mean, when I told you about the hacking team from Italy that mm-hmm. got owned themselves, and by owned, I mean somebody hacked them, took all their emails, took all the source code, all their software, and put it all online. It was great because it gave us the best insight into these types of companies that we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of business with a lot of really shady governments. And it's a huge business. There's so much money in this.
Well, you know, there's so much money. And we're also talking about private security firms, which are also known as mercenaries. And we had an issue recently, the Orlando shooting that happened at the gay nightclub, was a guy who worked for one of the largest mercenary firms in the world. How do you, if you want to go into the paranoia realm and you want to go into conspiracy theory land, well, gosh, oh, golly, what if there was a target in that club that they wanted out, but you took the whole club out to get the one target to cover up who you were trying to get?
Yeah.
It's pretty terrifying, Ben. The more I hear about this and the more I find out about this as a person who's had my experience in life with having my whole life turned upside down just from fucking TV networks lying about me. What happens when your government's lying about you?
Yeah, no, it's really impossible. I mean, you have to be a hacker, you have to be a spy if you just want to be a political dissident these days.
Even if you want to be a political activist who, let's say you oppose something that the city council is doing, let's say you oppose a illegal building development that was happening that's going to be built on, let's say, poison land, like the Transit Village in Highland Park in Los Angeles, that was being built on toxic land with violations in the building plans of the fire code violations, violations in earthquake safety, and you've got all these political activists, and all of a sudden it turns out that the corporation, the real estate development firm, is owned 30% by Goldman Sachs, and they want to destroy the political activists. These tools could be easily used for that, and they could legally be used, couldn't they?
Oh, yeah.
How could it be possible for them to legally be able to, go in and do this?
It's a gray area. It's not legal to deploy this kind of software on somebody else's phone.
Okay.
But it's perfectly legal for me to sell that software to you, to teach you how to use it, and to support you while you're doing it.
That's really weird, because isn't that aiding and abetting a crime?
Well, you'd think, but it's a gray area. As long as they don't know it's being used for malfeasance, and that's one of the best parts. Because when you read the emails from the hacking team that all leaked out, a lot of them were, you know, clearly trying to skirt an issue where they wanted to tell people that the software was capable of destroying their enemies without actually saying that the software would do that. But then there were other times when they just straight out said it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. This is some heavy, heavy, heavy shit. And a lot of people would write this off. It's just a conspiracy, right? It's just a conspiracy talk. But these are facts. This stuff is really being
used. You can read about it. This NSO group's exploit. I mean, in the description of the 935 patch, it gives credit not to the NSO group who made the exploit, but to the he forwarded to a nonprofit watchdog group. I don't remember who they were, but it gave credit. He gave credit to them for discovering it, which was kind of funny.
Wow.
Citizen Lab, that's who it was.
Citizen Lab, have you been going, how many years have you been going to this DEF CON Hackers Conference?
To be honest, I haven't gone for many years. This was the first year I've been there in like 10 years this last time, but I'm going again. It kind of had some growing pains where it got stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too big for its britches, and so it was kind of untenable to go, but I call those the awkward years.
What does that mean, it's too big and it's untenable to go?
Well, it was, okay, it was...
kind of like San Diego Comic-Con?
Yeah, imagine San Diego Comic-Con, but in a much smaller space. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah. It became impossible. I mean, when I was going and there was, like, you know, 500 to 1,000 people there, you could totally hold it in one of the smaller... Las Vegas casinos, or actually it was a small hotel. It was the Alexis Park, where it was for, I think, about 8 years. It's funny, DEF CON had a pretty hilarious early history where it was getting kicked out of every hotel that they would have it at.
So
it was only at the hotel one time, and then they'd move on.
Because they were too big, or because the hackers were doing crazy shit in the hotel?
Because the hackers were doing crazy shit, and they would mess with everything.
Sounds like a porn convention to me, baby.
Yeah, well, no, it was a lot of fun. Oh, man, I remember being in a hotel room in an early DEF CON, and they had actually opened up the wall to expose the wiring of the internal communication system of the hotel.
Whoa.
And they had completely controlled the switchboard. And so they were calling the front desk from other rooms to order us room service.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so they would call from, like, you know, 502 or something, and then they'd call as if they were sending us free food and drinks.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah, well, it was about that time when, like, the seventh or eighth tray of food comes in, and the guy starts to notice that the wall is open, and there's, like, you know, 15 computers in there and 30 different guys. I thought it'd be a good time to leave.
Oh my God, dude, that is a nightmare and a half. Why do you go to DEF CON? What is it about it? I'm not aware of you being like a hacktivist or anything. So why do you go to DEF CON?
Well, I've always had an interest in security, and I've always, you know, pushed the boundaries of technology. You know, when I was a kid, somebody told me, actually I learned on a BBS, which takes me back, about what's called red boxing. This is a trick that hasn't worked since the 80s.
Okay.
But the premise was, and you've seen it in movies, and but the premise is the tones on a payphone, when you put in money, tell the system that you put in money.
Right.
So if you can produce those tones without putting in money, the system thinks you put in money.
Hmm.
So I had a little DTMF tone generator you could buy at Radio Shack that would, like, dial numbers for you. And if you did something tricky with it, you could then make the tones of a quarter into the phone. So at the time, you know, it wasn't so easy to call New York, you know, for cheap.
Right,
and I
right.
had some friends all over, and so I could just put this device up to the phone, put a couple fake quarters into the line, and then I'm calling New York for free.
Yeah. Okay. So you've had a lifelong interest in security.
Yeah. And, you know, just tinkering in general. I mean, that's the thing. Most of the security problems and the security vulnerabilities that they discover are based on techniques that were discovered 20, 30 years ago.
Wow.
I mean, there's a lot of new spins on things, but most of the basic security should have been fixed decades ago.
Wow.
I mean, like, one of my favorite tricks back in the old days, I don't know if you remember shareware programs.
Yeah, no, I do.
30 days.
Yeah.
A classic trick that I used to do was, before you run the program for the first time, you set your clock ahead like 10 years. Then you run the program. It says you've got 30 days to use this program before you have to pay or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Then you close the program down. You set your clock back to the right time. And now you've got 10 years and 30 days to use this program.
Wow, that's clever. That's so, like, I would call that a low-tech hack. That is so clever.
Yeah, and you know what? It still works to this day.
Dude, on that note, we're going to wrap up the hour-long show, but I'm going to keep Ben on the line here for another 10 minutes for the What the Fuck segment of Heart Attack. Folks, I'm Hart D. Fisher. Thanks for listening to Heart Attack. And Ben, thank you for coming on the show and just laying it out for us.
My pleasure.
Heart Attack is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.